Rum Buncher Radio, episode 21. The tank is back on. The Pirates have been swept by the Kansas City Royals. They split with Chicago earlier in the week. Trey Yannity, Nick Caparoso, Marty Leap with you. Gentlemen, this season has been a little bit of a roller coaster ride for various reasons, but one thing has stayed consistent. The Pirates have not been winning a whole lot of games. They had troubles with Chicago earlier in the year. They were no hit. This time around, they were not no hit, but they looked pretty poor in the second effort there. A win, though, on Tuesday night. Let's get right into it. Big Joe coming out looking great, only allowing 3 hits, 5 strikeouts. Rich Rod coming on and Kyle Crick doing their thing again. The Reynolds play was unbelievable, hosing Madrigal at the plate. What were your guys' thoughts on game number one there and the victory over Chicago Tuesday?
What I liked most in that game was definitely what we saw from Joe Musgrove. That was the best he's looked all year by far, and it was against a very, very good lineup that he looked that way. So it was great to see him get out there, get back on the horse, you know, put forth a really strong start. And again, against a great lineup, against one of the best lineups in baseball with the Chicago White Sox. So it was definitely encouraging to see that. Hopefully that'll lead to another 2 or 3 strong starts to Musgrove down the stretch here and head into the offseason with some momentum for him. And between that and just the terrific start that Key Brian Hayes continues to have in his career, I mean, even though the Pirates lost a whole lot of games this week, there are definitely some positives to pull out of it when you're looking at the long-term health of this organization.
It was definitely good to see Musgrove get back out there. And, you know, even that first start he had back out, he made it through 3 innings, and really he looked pretty solid. And the end of that first start back, you know, he ended up giving up a couple runs that, you know, were inherited runners after he left the game. So it was kind of nice to see him get out there and have a clean start, not give up anything, like you said, against, you know, a very good offense that he's going to be unfamiliar with as well. So, you know, the other thing you got to like is he only gave up 1 hard hit in that game. So not only was he striking out, you know, over 1 per inning, but he was getting a lot of weak contact. So definitely a positive, you know, from Joe Musgrove. And once again, like Chris Stratton, you know, came in late in that game and, you know, once continue to just be solid what he's been for the last couple of years. And, you know, I don't feel like he's getting enough praise for the job he's done in the bullpen, because while he's not the arm that, you know, a lot of other relievers are, he's been quietly, you know, effective. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what kind of role he carves out going forward, if he ends up becoming, you know, a potential trade chip. But, you know, beyond that, like you said, the Cabrian Hayes thing, you know, he continues to just look different than a lot of the other players on the team. You know, he, for a young guy who's just making his big league debut, you know, he looks very comfortable and he continues to hit the ball hard. And, you know, when you're doing that and you're not striking out a lot, you know, you're definitely going to find your way onto the field. Now, you know, as we've seen more recently, for some reason, every 3 days he can't play, but that's for later.
One thing you said, Nick, real quick with Hayes, you said how he just looks different than everybody else on the field. And I don't want to be like heaping these kinds of expectations or anything on him, but it reminds me so much of when Andrew McCutchen was first called up and he just looked different. You could just see he was head and shoulders above everyone else.
You're excited to see him no matter what, whether he's in the field, on the bases, at the plate.
And that's what Hayes has done already. Defensively, running the bases, he's crushing the ball to plate. Like, it's just, he looks so much better. Even like, you know, you throw in Brian Reynolds, you throw in Colin Moranis having a great season, throw in Josh Bell, even those guys, Hayes just looks so much better than everyone else on the Pirates roster right now. Like, it's just nice to finally, to me, for the first time since McCutchen was here, it is so nice to have that guy who, you know, is the face of your franchise moving forward. He's your building block. He's the guy you're going to build around. He's the guy who is going to, you know, lead your team the next time you're making the postseason, that sort of thing. It's just so nice to finally have that player again.
I was just about to say the same thing, Marty. Just the Andrew McCutchen factor, just the confidence from pitch number one, inning number one. You never see him without a smile on his face. You never see him giving that max effort when he's down in counts, you know, when he's struggling even. This dude is just he just brings more. It's so exciting to watch. You got to hope, like you said, you don't want to throw this expectation on him, but I think he understands his position. I think he understands that he is the centerpiece moving forward. Great to see him come up and just have, such a stellar couple of weeks here. We're going to talk about some of the defense we saw in this Kansas City series. But before that, let's talk about Roberto Clemente Day. What an honor. What a great, ceremony. They honored Roberto Clemente wearing the number 21. Any Puerto Rican-born player throughout Major League Baseball was allowed to wear the number 21 as well. Joey Cora, I think, was, the most inspiring part of this whole thing, being a native of Puerto Rico, the first Pirate to wear the number 21 since Roberto Clemente. An emotional video. I don't know if you guys saw pregame and everything else. What a cool day, and what a great way to honor Roberto Clemente this year.
Yeah, I mean, it really was, and I was happy to see how much coverage it got, because, this is something, especially us as Pirate fans, we really would like to see this become an annual thing. We talked last show just about everything he did for baseball, for Latin American players, international players in general, but also just the stuff off the field that he did for the city of Pittsburgh and, the world. So it was exciting to see. It was exciting to see a lot of other players requesting, and trying to get the clearance to wear 21 as well. I think that just speaks about, what these professional baseball players, and they understand, what Roberto Clemente meant to baseball.
Yeah, one thing with the Clemente Day stuff that moving forward, I'd really love to see, I'm a believer of that the number 21 should be retired around baseball. I think an argument can be made that Clemente is just as important to baseball in terms of breaking race barriers and things of that nature as Jackie Robinson is. But one idea I saw some people float around that I really liked and I would love to see baseball do moving forward is you don't necessarily retire 21, but what you do is every year, whoever was each team's Clemente Award recipient from the year before, the following season they wear 21.
I like that idea a lot too.
Yeah, it's like an honor to Clemente. It's an honor for them to say, hey, I won this award. I get to wear this number now because I'm so involved in my community, and I'm giving back.
They just know it's a big honor too.
Yeah, I really like that idea, and I'd love to see baseball move towards doing something like that moving forward. So I really do hope that how much of an emphasis was put on Clemente Day this year, becomes the norm moving forward, because it should. I mean, as I said, I think there's a strong argument to be made that Roberto Clemente is as important to breaking race barriers and things like that in baseball as Jackie Robinson was.
Like I said, the big thing with him is, what he did for the international player. Like, Jackie Robinson, like you said, he changed, obviously, not only baseball, but sports in the world. But really, after that, that just opened up the doors for, potential people of different race in America to get an opportunity. What Roberto Clemente did showed that there could be really good talent found elsewhere than the United States. And that's why I get what you're saying, Marty, about, the influence he really had on the game. And yeah, I really like the idea of giving the award, letting the award be, the honor to wear number 21. And I think you kind of seen across baseball, last week, the people get what that means in the game of baseball.
Just real quick to circle back to that with Clemente and opening the door for international players. And this is not all international players. This is just players, any Latin born players. Just from a quick Google search here, in 2017, so I'm sure this number has gone up, 27.4% of major league players were of Latin native. They were born in a Latin American country. And without Clemente, you have to wonder how many of those guys would have gotten the opportunities that they have gotten. And I just think because you see where more than one-fourth of the players in Major League Baseball are of Latino, they're Latino-born or come from a Latino background, whatever it might be, they can attest a lot of what they have accomplished to the doors Clemente opened. And I think that's where that argument can be made that he is as important as anybody in the history of Major League Baseball.
Well, we talked about it a ton last go around, but you know, how many guys throughout our entire lives have just, you know, been the best hitters in the game from these Latin American countries? You know, so many guys that have really made,
look at the game right now,
in the game right now, of course, as well.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Ronald Acuña's and guys Acuña, like that, you know. Tatis.
So many guys, so many
Soto.
Guys. And, you know, the list is really endless. And
yeah, and I like you throwing out Pujols there. You know, tonight he hit his 660th home run. Yeah. So,
you know, just it really, I don't think you can explain the impact that Roberto Clemente made, and just being the humanitarian he was too, not just coming here and breaking the barrier, but the way he did it and the kind of person he was. What a great day on Wednesday to have that honor and, you know, to just finally make a bigger, a grander step at retiring 21 universally, or, you know, having some deeper honor for Roberto Clemente every year. The Pirates didn't quite have the on-field success they were looking for in game two. They then had an off day on Thursday and hit the road for Kansas City. Some positives to take away from this series, you know, we can kind of address this as a whole. One thing I think the biggest bright spot in the series this weekend was just the defense we saw from Ke'Bryan Hayes. You know, we heard about it so much before he came up that this guy could come up and, you know, maybe be one of the best defensive third basemen in the game, already showing that the barehanded throw, the over-the-shoulder catch in game two, just showing it all off. What was your guys' favorite part of this series against Kansas City? And I guess, you know, where were you when the next Ke'Bryan Hayes moment happened in this one?
Yeah, you got to go with the over the grab and the foul, over the shoulder grab and foul territory. I mean, that's a play you're not going to see a lot of third basemen even get close to that ball, you know, especially on the current roster. Nothing against Colin Moran. He's done a nice job at first base and his opportunities there. But, you know, he struggles especially with those foul ball, fly balls. So, but even with that, there's no way he's getting close to that. Ke'Bryan Hayes not only showing off the glove, but, you know, his overall athleticism, his speed getting to that ball. You know, it's once again one of those things like we've been talking about. He just looks different. You know, every play he's bringing it.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, I didn't see a ton of Saturday or Sunday's games, which, you know, may have been for the best. Yeah, Saturday night, my oldest son and I, we were watching his school's varsity football game on TV, and then Sunday afternoon, I was watching my beloved Minnesota Vikings embarrass themselves against the Packers. But, that over-the-shoulder catch, man, there are a few, very few third basemen in baseball who are going to make that play. It was incredible. It's like Nick said, we'd heard all along that Hayes could step up and maybe be the best defensive third baseman in baseball as soon as he got here. And he might be. I mean, no disrespect to Matt Chapman or Nolan Arenado, but, man, Hayes looks as good as anybody over there right now. And it's just – not to keep harping on this, but – the Pirates sure seem to just have an absolute superstar in their hands already in Ke'Bryan Hayes.
What do you think the mindset is, you know, knowing that this player is on the team? You know, this guy's different. This guy's elite. Why do we still see JT Riddle? What goes into the decision-making with some of these lineups when Hayes, you know, doesn't make it?
Yeah, one of the few things I did have the honor of seeing between Saturday and Sunday's game was, you know, early on Sunday, I was flipping back and forth between the Pirates and the Vikings, and I flip over, and the first thing I see is JT Riddle just box a ball over third base, and I was about ready to throw my remote through the TV. So I don't get it. I really don't. I mean, is Riddle here next year? Probably not. If he is, it's as a utility bench guy. I don't understand. I mean, obviously, you're not going to play Hayes every single day. You're not going to play anybody every single day when they first get up to the majors. But, I mean, this late in the season, man, there's no reason for Hayes to get more than a day off once every, I don't know, 10 games or so, maybe, if that. But, yeah, so to see Riddle 2-3 times a week is just infuriating. And I don't know. I just hope it ends soon because it just makes no sense to me. Like if Riddle was playing in a position where you didn't have your – you know, future there, like to do a third base with Hayes, it'd be one thing. But when you have your future third baseman, the guy who's going to be the face of your franchise for the next 5, 6, 7 years, if not longer, I don't get it. It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, it's the same thing too. Like, it's not even like Riddle's producing. You know, I get it if you're trying to give Hayes a day off and you stick Eric Gonzalez over there at third base and whatever, then it's like, okay, but you know, Riddle's not even producing. Like you said, he's not going to, if he's on this team next year, then there's something, you know, definitely severely wrong. You got to figure a guy like Phillip Evans and Anthony Alford, they're going to have spots on this roster before JT Real does. Right now, it's not even, like you said, every so many days, whatever, but it's been a pretty much a rotation. Hayes plays two games, Riddle's in. And I really don't get it. Like you said, you know, the only thing I can think of is that they're trying to make sure Hayes doesn't get overexposed too many times against the same team. But you know, that's part of the learning curve too for a guy like him, and he's going to have to do that eventually. So why not, like you said, with, you know, the last couple of weeks of the season here, he needs to be out there as much as possible and getting through those situations now.
5 errors and 13 starts for JT Riddle. Very frustrating. One in Sunday's ball game there in the first inning. I think it was ruled an infield single, but a play that needs to be made by JT Riddle. Some sloppy defense. You see the Josh Bell play down the line, you know, with the chance to gun the guy at home. It really blew up for Chad Kuhl. 9 earned runs in just 2.1. Walked 6. Struck out 5. You know, what were you guys' takeaways from Chad Kuhl's effort on Sunday? He didn't have it. Was this all on him, or, you know, where do we move forward with Chad Kuhl after the blow-up game there in Kansas City?
Yeah, you know, I'm continually wondering if he's having a little bit of an issue with his hand. You know, the control is still, you know, suspect. And a lot of it right now might be Kuhl just trying to get his work in after missing, you know, so much time. And on the flip, you know, in the same breath, I should say, that the Pirates just need him out there to eat up innings and, you know, get through the last couple of weeks here. So it might be at this point more about him just getting out there and throwing pitches. You know, unfortunately, they haven't been very effective right now, but I think he's okay. I think it's going to be a matter of, you know, this finger issue and what they decide to do with him going forward.
Yeah, I wonder that too, his health. I mean, early from early on in the game on Sunday, just looked off. You know, look on his face. He kind of kept going to his hand a little bit. It just seemed like something was off there. So I do wonder if he is battling something there. And, you know, like you said, Nick, they're going to try and get his work in. He missed so much time. And like a game like today, you know, you play that doubleheader tomorrow. You know, when you have a doubleheader on Monday, you want your starter on Sunday to go a lot more than 2 innings, especially when, you know, your starters got pretty roughed up Friday and Saturday night as well. So I do wonder if they did not have that doubleheader coming up on Monday, if Cole maybe gets pulled a little bit sooner than he does anyhow. But, I mean, now you're going into Monday afternoon where you're going to play 2 games. You're going to have at least 2 bullpen arms unavailable, and one of your 2 starting pitchers is going to be a guy that hasn't pitched in over a month. So you know how much length he's going to be able to give you. So I don't doubt they were trying to get as much out of Kuhl as they could on Sunday, and he, you know, really kind of took one for the team. But, yeah, I also wouldn't be surprised if we find out he's not quite 100% right now, just with how well he pitched early in the season compared to how he's pitched his last 2 outings. It's too much of a flip of a switch for me to not think there's something wrong.
It's been night and day.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not like those first 3, 4, 5 starts or whatever it was. He was like teetering, you know, getting out of bases loaded jam, stranding runners, all this where you could kind of see it coming. Because it was, I mean, he was battling the home run ball a little bit, but his control was great. He was striking a bunch of guys out. He wasn't giving up very many hits. And the last 2 outings, he's got no idea where his pitches are going, it seems. And the ones that do go for strikes are getting crushed. So I really do think that he might be working his way through something right now. And hey, you know what? If he is, just get him to the end of the season, let him rest up in the off season, and get ready for probably playing a pretty big role in this rotation in 2021.
And, you know, there's 15 games left. This team is they know the position they're in, you know, and especially on Sunday with the lineup they put out there. I don't think it was ever, there was no reason to pull him in the first inning in that game. He does get absolutely drilled. The Pirates leave Kansas City now 2-15. Against the AL Central, but they have regained 30th place. So the battle for Kumar is in Pittsburgh's hands as of now. They will head to Cincinnati, like you guys mentioned a second ago, for a doubleheader on Monday. The return of Mitch the Kid we've been waiting for this for a little bit now. I'm super interested to see. We don't know yet if he will be pitching in game one or two as we record here on Sunday night. Do we see a limit on Mitch Keller tomorrow? We've heard some speculation, or do they just let him go?
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. On one hand, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't let him go further than a certain point, you know, 50 pitches, 60 pitches, whatever it might be. On the other hand, you know, depending on how much work he's been able to get in simulated games and whatnot in Altoona and how stretched out he is, maybe they let him go. I personally am of the belief if they were going to have him on a very strict pitch limit of less than probably 60, 65 pitches, I highly doubt we'd see him pitching in a doubleheader. You know, we'd see him go on a day where the bullpen wouldn't be needed as much. But we'll find out. I mean, those first two starts with Keller that he made for going to the injury list, he didn't pitch great, but to his credit, he really battled and did not let things unravel on him and get away from him the way they could have. And you have to wonder, too, that some of the struggles he had in the starts, how much of them were because of the injury. So my biggest thing I'll be watching with Keller on Monday, I want to see the velocity up. I'd like to see swing and misses up. His first two starts, he was not generating very many swings and misses, which is always alarming for any starting pitcher, especially a guy like Keller who's going to lean so heavily on the strikeout. So my biggest thing with Mitch on Monday, I want to see the velocity up on the pitches. I want to see some swings and misses. If we see those, regardless of the result, I'll be pretty happy.
Marty, you're spot on. Like you said, the results at this point, not so much worried about as I am him just getting out there and getting some work in. The velocity, like you said, last year we were seeing him up at 96, 97. We didn't see that at all early this year. You know, hopefully that was because of whatever he was dealing with and he's gotten past it. The strikeout numbers, you know, were not where we would expect them. You know, he threw 7 2/3 innings. He only had 3 strikeouts, 4 walks. Not exactly, like you said, as effective as we want to see. But he also battled and got through some tough situations, which is, you know, good for his development as well. So hopefully we see a little bit of a stronger Mitch Keller here down the stretch, like you said, in whatever capacity that may be. Then, of course, we also have Cody Ponce going tomorrow in the other game of the doubleheader. So, you know, once again, it's good to see some of the young pitching prospects getting opportunities here down the stretch.
It's really a lot of fun. Ponce is one that, you know, we talked about it a good bit after that first Chicago series, the White Sox, that is. But, you know, I'm really interested to see kind of how he progresses here as a starter down the stretch. And with Keller, too, I think, you know, the swing and miss stuff needs to come, but just to see him have a game where he trusts in that fastball and has that velocity where we expect it to be, I think would be such a big step. Because really, at any point these last 2 years, I don't think we've seen one game where he's really been in control of the fastball completely. Hopefully being healthy, you know, getting some work in these last couple months off the field has gotten him there. But outside of that, what are you guys excited for this series? The Reds come in 14-8 against the Central. The Pirates at 12-15. These two teams are in fourth and fifth place here. You know, what do you guys expect offensively and, you know, as a whole throughout this series against the Reds?
I'll be interested to see if we get any fireworks, you know, this series. The Reds and the Pirates, you know, we have that history of bench clearings over the last, you know, part of the decade or so. And, you know, we haven't really seen that intensity yet this year. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if we can get through another series without any, you know, real fireworks, not during the game as much as during the game.
Yeah, well, one thing I'll be watching this series, I think what I'll really be watching these next probably 2 weeks in general, is I just want to see some of these guys who you know are going to be key pieces next year. I just want to see how they finish. Can Colin Moran continue to have what looks like a breakout season? Can he finish strong? Josh Bell showed a lot of signs over the weekend that maybe he's finally breaking out of his slump. Can he finish strong? Can Brian Reynolds put something together here down the stretch to try and salvage this season? You know, can Eric Gonzalez continue to hit the ball? What's Keller going to do? Some of these bullpen arms, Stratton, Hartley, Turley, Rodriguez, guys who have really had quietly really strong seasons, can they finish strong? I just – one thing that I said before the season started that I really wanted to see more than anything else coming out of September is just some hope, some optimism going into next year. And I think if you can see these guys who you know are going to be key pieces next season, especially the guys who have had good seasons so far, finished with a strong 2 weeks here. You know, you can start to feel a little bit of optimism then going into the offseason if you can comfortably say you have this nice little core here of guys if they finish the year strong.
That's really what this is about. Each and every one of these games, just seeing what you got, getting ready for next season, and really, you know, in a way, trying to get that number one pick, and just finishing strong, finishing on a high note. The Pirates will take on the Reds for four here this week. They will then welcome in the Cardinals to Pittsburgh, the Cubs, and then we'll travel to Cleveland to finish out the year. Jameson Taillon has been getting a lot of work in recently. We've seen the videos of live VP looking a lot more confident, acting a lot more confident. How big is it going to be to get him back next year? What kind of Jameson Taillon, you know, are we going to see when that does happen to complement this staff as he continues to get healthy?
Yeah, it'll be great to have him back next year. I think, in my opinion at least, the biggest, weakest link with this team this season has been the starting rotation. The bullpen has been a lot better than anyone's going to give it credit for. I mean, the overall bullpen numbers have just absolutely drugged to hell by three or four guys who aren't even in this bullpen anymore. The offense has had its struggles, but push come to shove, the offense has really started to kind of get things going here. But there have been so many games, and I think this past weekend is an example of this. There have been so many games where the starting pitcher hasn't even given the Pirates a chance. I mean, look at this past weekend. Brault, I realize, only gave up three or four runs, whatever it was, but only went four innings. Trevor Williams gets tagged for six runs. Chad Cole gives up 9 2 1/3. There's just been too many starts like that this year where your starter doesn't even give you an opportunity to win the game. And it would just be nice to get JMO back, get that top of the rotation anchor arm that this team has missed so much this year back. It'll be nice. I don't think the Pirates, at least in my opinion, the Pirates don't have a guy, I can say this about right now, but I can say this about Jameson Taillon. He is a guy who, when he goes out there every fifth day, I feel like the Pirates, not even that they just have a chance to win, they have the advantage in the starting pitching matchup. You know, like I think Taillon is that kind of guy where he is the guy who, when he starts, you expect to win, and they don't have that right now. You know, and it'd just be nice to have that back.
The question is if he can get back to that form. I mean, coming off the second Tommy John surgery, you know, I think coming off of one nowadays has become a thing that's been a little more, you know, less stressful. You know, not everyone comes back. We saw a guy like Nick Kingham. Didn't work out for him per se. But, you know, when you see the second one, you really got to worry if, you know, he'll ever get back to that form, because it was really disappointing. He was really looking like he was turning the corner there at the end of 2018. And obviously coming back in 2019, there was a lot of expectations, and you could just see from his first, start on last year that there wasn't something, you know, there was something off with him. So, you know, and to his credit, he's working hard, and the bullpen videos that we're seeing of him, he looks good, and the curveball looks sharp, and the velocity looks like it's there. But, you know, next year is a long way off, so let's just hope that he can continue to progress healthy and, you know, get back into this rotation next year.
And I think if there's one guy that the fan base really wants to see just come back and be successful is Jameson Taillon. Everything that's happened, I mean, having Tommy John in the minors, having the testicular cancer, now, you know, this injury as well. It's been such a tragic story so far for Jameson, for such a talented guy, and really the true ace the Pirates have needed over these last couple seasons.
Yeah, and like you said, Nick, the biggest thing is with Taillon is just going to see what is he when he comes back to. I mean, I'm confident he'll be all right. You know, if you go back and look at that stretch he had from the start of 2018 up until when he made his last start in 2019, you know, this is a 39 start stretch. He had a 3.35 ERA. You know, he was 2018. He led the National League in complete games. He went over 200 innings. Like, he was just an absolute horse for the Pirates. And, you know, if they can get that back, or even anything close to that, man, it'll be great. And like you touched on, Trey, he's a guy just so easy to root for. The Tommy John surgeries, that hernia surgery, testicular cancer, Like, I think there's a strong argument that can be made that Jameson Taillon might be the unluckiest human being on the face of this planet. Like, seriously, it's one thing after another with the poor guy. He's as talented as any pitcher in baseball, and just it's just one fluke thing after another. So just hopefully he can come back, he can be healthy, he can put together a nice run for the Pirates next year and just anchor that rotation and give them what they really need.
I think there's a silver lining. I think it's lining up to be a great comeback story. Hopefully that is the case, and the Pirates are, you know, beginning to contend next year with a guy like Jameson Taillon at the head of the staff. But this year, it's not looking like the Pirates will, you know, be in any kind of position to win. But the Chicago Cubs now sit atop the NL Central, the Atlanta Braves atop the East, the Dodgers in the West, and the AL, we got Tampa. Chicago has looked like one of the best teams in baseball. Oakland, San Diego as well. But let's get a league-wide refresh here. Talk about kind of who we like, who we expect to continue to dominate down the stretch. You're only a quarter of the season left to go. Where do you guys pick for the divisional winners and maybe the wild cards as well? Who do you see making the playoffs as we get close in this 2020 season?
In terms of the National League, you got the National League East. You got like what the Braves are doing there. You know, they're a team, they're going to strike out a lot, but they still have, you know, a quality lineup pretty much the whole way, you know, starting from one down to the bottom. They got some of the most dynamic young players in baseball. And they got, you know, Ian Anderson, one of their top pitching prospects. He's come up and he's been very good for them. So the Braves are definitely in a good spot, especially with a division that kind of, you know, has looked kind of mediocre this year, especially when you consider the Marlins right now sitting in second place. They're a team that, you know, many expected to finish, you know, well in the basement in that division. Moving on to the Central, you know, the Cubs are really running away with it. It's something that I didn't expect, and I don't think any of us necessarily expected. We thought the Cardinals were going to show up a little more this year than they have. But obviously the Cubs with the good, once again, good lineup. Their pitching staff has looked a lot better this year than expected. Dodgers, Padres, that's going to be the most exciting, you know, finish to watch there. You're talking the Dodgers, the classic, you know, big market team that's been winning that NL West for years now against the young up-and-coming Padres who won the trade deadline. Once again, like the Braves have some of the most exciting young players in baseball. Reinforcements coming for them. The nice thing about the Padres is that, you know, they're definitely going to get into playoffs this year, and they have so much young talent yet to come. So the Padres are going to be an exciting team. You figure they'll end up in the wild card. You know, flipping over to the American League. Well, I shouldn't say that. I think the Dodgers will still win the NL West, but, you know, I should have said that. Flipping over to the American League, I think the Rays will still come out of the East. The Yankees, you know, the injury bug has caught up to them a little bit, you know, but they're only four games back, so I wouldn't count them out just yet. The AL Central's a tight race, White Sox, Twins, Indians. I'd like to see the White Sox come out on top there. You know, similar thing to the Padres here. They've been building it for a couple of years, and, you know, you're starting to see that pay off for them. Going out west, you know, the A's look like they're well ahead there. They don't look like they're going to slow down. So, once again, they have a pretty weak division when you're talking about the Mariners, Angels, and Rangers. So, I don't see them getting caught by the Astros anytime soon.
Yeah, with the American League, it's pretty set in stone who the eight playoff teams are going to be. I mean, right now, Cleveland has the last wild card spot. They have a 6-game lead on the Mariners. The Mariners aren't going to catch them. You know, those top eight teams are going to be in. It's just a matter of who does what. Like you said, Nick, the Rays and the A's look like safe bets to win their divisions. The AL Central is going to be a lot of fun down the stretch between the White Sox and the Twins. Over in the National League, the Braves and the Cubs are going to win their divisions. No one's going to catch them. The Dodgers and the Padres will be a lot of fun to watch down the stretch here. But I think in the National League, you get down to that last wild card spot. You know, that's where it could get a little interesting. You have the Giants, who I don't think anybody expected to be there this year, currently holding that. The Rockies are 2 games behind them, so you can't totally count them out. The Brewers are only 3 back. So we could see a little bit more of a race there down the stretch than we will in the American League. But Yeah, I definitely think, you know, in the National League, we're going to see the Dodgers, either the Dodgers or the Padres or the Braves and Cubs winning the divisions. In the American League, it's going to be Tampa and Oakland and either the White Sox or the Twins. But it'll be really interesting, I think, this year, too, when you get to the playoffs with this new format with the eight teams. I mean, do we see a San Francisco or a Philadelphia who just barely sneaks in there? Do they make a run? You know, who knows? It'll be fun to watch.
It's going to be exciting any way you draw it with 16 teams. And I guess I'm not necessarily in favor of this rule. I've always loved how difficult it is to make the playoffs in baseball. But I think with such a wacky year, you know, with so much and only in 60 games, why not? Let's roll with 16. It's going to be crazy to see teams like the New York Yankees with so much star power so deep that are, you know, they're going to have to play in a wild card format and, you know, in one way or another if they don't catch teams like Tampa. But like you said, Marty, really, there could be teams like the Giants or Philadelphia or even maybe, you know, a Milwaukee that slips in last minute that could make a run. We saw it last year. The Washington Nationals, they had to fight for their lives in the wild card game. Who's one team out of all 30 that you guys maybe pick as the sleeper team to make a run this year in the playoffs?
I think the Cleveland Indians, while, you know, they might not necessarily be picked as a sleeper team, just because they've been pretty good for the last few years. A lot of people thought this was going to be kind of the Indians' year to start to blow it up. They thought at the deadline you would potentially see, you know, Francisco Lindor traded. Of course, you saw Mike Clevenger traded, but that had some different circumstances around it. The thing about the Indians is that their pitching is just unbelievable. So if they can get into the playoffs with that pitching staff, anything can happen for them. And they've been there for the last few years too. So they kind of, you know, that is one of those things that they have over the White Sox and a bit of the Twins as well, which helps. I think another exciting team to watch, I mentioned them earlier, coming out of the National League, is the Miami Marlins. Like I said, no one was really expecting them to do much this year, let alone be in the race for a playoff spot. And once again, they're six in their last, they've won six out of their last 10. You know, they're playing good baseball. They've been kind of playing solid baseball a year. They go out, they make the trade to bring in a guy like Starling Marte. You know, so they look like kind of maybe a team from the National League that if they get in, you know, at least like to cheer for him a little bit, see Marte do well in the playoffs and, you know, just kind of give a hope for, you know, what the Pirates are trying to do here that, you know, the Marlins have been doing for the last few years.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's just such a fun team because of the stretch that they've gone now of having for a while, so many guys that were capable of winning and they couldn't pull it off. This has been such a weird year for them and so many narratives, so many different storylines. That'd be such a fun team to see make a run. And I think there's a lot of really likable teams this year. You know, you got the Acuñas in Atlanta, San Diego with the Tatis and, you know, all the Grand Slam drama and everything else. There's really some teams that are going to have a lot of fun storylines around them this year as we head into the playoffs. And just such a wacky year. You know, like, I don't know, what are you most excited about, I guess, with the new rule changes this playoffs? I feel like it's going to change just about everything. But, you know, just from the format down, what gets you the most excited?
I think, like I said, you're expanding the playoffs here. You're giving more teams an opportunity. A team like the Marlins, who really took advantage of, you know, this weird year and the expanded playoff format. I'll be interested to see if, you know, people catch on to the 16-team format or not, because it's one of those things that if it seems like it works and it gets popular, you know, I don't know if they'll go 16 teams per se, but, you know, this is one of those things I think could lead to a playoff expansion in the next CBA.
Certainly. And, you know, I think a lot of people have been calling for it. In Major League Baseball, we've seen so many strides towards just modernizing the game. And I think this is one of those things that gets people excited because it makes it a little bit more dramatic. You know, it makes it a little bit more exciting. You know, I feel like there is that very traditional baseball fan that's still, I would say I might, you know, classify myself in this group that wants 10 and isn't as open to this. But I think if this trial run goes successful, we could definitely see a playoff expansion at the next CBA. And, you know, I think this could make the playoffs a whole lot of fun depending on how things go. Even with 16 teams, the Pirates will not be in the playoffs this year, but we have a lot of baseball to go still. A couple of weeks of you know, getting to see Ke'Bryan Hayes, getting to see this lineup continue, Mitch Keller coming back now. Exciting stuff to talk about. We're going to join you later in the week to recap this upcoming series and preview the rest of the season as well. The Cincinnati Reds and the Pittsburgh Pirates, Nick, you mentioned it earlier, still no fighting this year. It's been a little bit surprising. We might see some sparks fly this week. Doubleheader tomorrow will get us started. But until next time, the Pittsburgh Pirates have been swept by the Kansas City Royals and find themselves back in 30th in Major League Baseball. For Marty Leap and Nick Caparoso, my name is Trey Anity. Rum Bunter Radio is making the switch. We are getting away from Spreaker.com. You can now find us on Omni.com. You can find us on fansided.com as well, rumbunter.com, on our social media at Twitter and on Apple Music as well. Until next time, let's go Bucks.